You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. This is Side A.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Clock Radio Speakers. I'm your co-host, Armand Wake Up. You can follow me on Twitter at Armand Wake Up, A-R-M-O-N-D, Wake Up, all one word. More important than that, please follow the official Clock Radio Speakers Twitter handle, which is at CRS Podcast. ClockRadioSpeakers.com is where you can get all of our previous episodes. We are on iTunes. You can vote, rate, and comment there. That would be great. We're pretty much everywhere except for SoundCloud because they're trash and dying soon. Clockstradamus strikes again.
They got an influx of money.
Yeah. I mean, but for how long?
Right. What's the end game? What are they going to do? Keep hosting people's DJ mixes with not getting people to charge money? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. So that's why I'm like, okay, they got some more money, but it's just, you know, it's pouring money into, you know, we're keeping him alive for the family versus, you know, just he's probably in pain right now. Just let him go. Let him go. We're on social media, facebook.com/clockradiospeakers. We're on Instagram at CRS Podcast. We're on Twitter at CRS Podcast. I think I said that already. And we're on 4thDistrict.com. Shout out to 4th District. And that's everything, right?
I think so.
Okay. Word. Doc's here. What's up, Doc?
Everything's good, man. You can follow me on Twitter if you want, @Doc_beats_S9Z. But like Armand said, just follow the show. No, man. Things are good.
There's people who follow all three of us.
That's right. That's right. And then when we all just retweet each other, they're like, ah.
Right. Essentially.
No, man.
I mean, if they follow you, they find you listening to random Diamonds in the Rough records from 1999.
Listen. So let's say how this started. This is a good story, actually. So you tweeted me about Diamonds in the Rough telling a story about Just Blaze.
I text you.
Text you. Sorry, not tweeting me. Right.
So I text you. So I was listening to It's the Real. They had a Rockefeller tribute show. So they brought out Jesus, everybody. They even Shaka. They brought out hip hop. They brought out Biggs. I think Emery was there. Freeway, Young Guns, I'm sure I'm on Just Blaze. And the story, somebody told a story of how Just Blaze got introduced to Rockefeller. And the story was that Diamonds in the Rough approached, I think, hip hop or Lenny S, one of those two, and was like, hey, we've got a guy who makes beats just like Swizz, but only charges $5,000. And what was funny was that on Clock Radio Speakers, we've talked about him on the Busta Rhymes retro, the Rough Riders retro. Just is considered the GOAT or one of the GOATs to a lot of people. Early Just Blaze is a Swizz Beatz carbon copy. So for them to co-sign that and then for Just Blaze to kind of get mad and like fight it, like everybody was making beats like Just Blaze or Swizz Beatz in 1998. No, bro, it was you. So I text you that and then what did you do?
And well, first thing I did, I was trying to figure out the connection because, let's see, Just Blaze, before he was signed to Rockefeller, had a production deal with Sony. Both him and I think Spot had a little thing going on with Sony in the late 90s.
Shout out to Spot, friend of the show.
And so I was like, oh, I wonder if Diamonds in the Rough was just like, you know, if they somehow got like, before they, you know, if they somehow were like not really on Rockefeller, so instead they get like, you know, they got picked up by somebody who just wanted like to draft a little bit off of the Rockefeller brand at that point. But they were signed to Tommy Boy in the late 90s.
Yeah.
So I couldn't make that connection. And then once I went down that deep, I was like, all right, well, let me listen to some of this stuff from, you know, 98, 99, even some of the stuff from like early 2000s or whatever. Because I think the only Diamonds in the Rough records I heard them on. What I've heard them on?
I think they had a record on Streets Is Watching.
Yep.
They were on Volume 2.
That's right. Volume 2.
They had a bonus disc that I believe was either on Volume 1 or Volume 2.
Right.
And, yeah, that was about it.
So, you know, there was some stuff on YouTube that if I had heard, I certainly hadn't heard in a long time, which is why YouTube is amazing. But no, I went digging down and I was like, okay, you know, I mean, this isn't, you know, terrible. Like, but
I mean, were there any whack artists on early Rockefeller? I'm not talking about the Samantha Ronson days.
I mean, Emil was not good.
She has some joints on her album. Listen, For the Fam is her record. It's her record. It's her record.
All right.
She had a record called Quarrels or Demons or something like, I think it was called something like that, but it had the same sample as Shine the Commission. It was dope. There's three records on that album. Three.
What was the other single share? Was it with Beyonce?
Yeah, I got that.
I haven't heard that in a long time.
Right.
But no, you know, and then off of that, I was deep into like the late 90s. Because every so often I forget about how amazing Discogs.com is.
Yeah.
Right. Where they list like, if it was released somewhere, like if as any sort of physical product, some nerd has probably put it on Discogs.com.
Shout out to the nerds.
So I went digging because, like many people who grew up in this era, I spent a lot of money with either BMG and or Columbia House.
Yes.
BMG was my gateway drug into that world. And so I had a like BMG like fall, I want to say like 98 sampler or 97. I think it might have been 97, like late 97 sampler of like artists from Loud. Okay. So it was Inspect the Deck Rec Room. It was a Big Pun record, Cellar Dwellers.
Wow.
Something that Mob made back when they thought Murder Music was going to drop in late 98. Like it was really, but it's one of those things where it's like, you know, if you didn't have BMG, like you didn't have that at all. And, you know, this is before Napster. It's just before Napster, but it's before Napster. So like the idea of like, oh, like here's something that like was showing up in the Source Fat Tape.
Yeah,
but I like Rec Room. Like I'm the world's biggest Inspect the Deck stan in late 97, 1998, right? And here's the song off this album that has been delayed and rumored and everything else. And I actually like I have it. It was amazing. So of course they had that. And then I went deep down the Inspect the Deck rabbit hole, and I was like, there's a remix of Life with Casey and JoJo that uses the Cream pianos.
I've never heard that in my entire life.
Right, and I was just like, what is going on? So you know. I went down one of those rabbit holes, all based off of you texting me about Diamonds in the Rough.
Yeah.
Just another Tuesday in Clock Radio Speakers World Headquarters.
Right. What was interesting is you talked about the Fat Tape. So a friend of mine, well, a coworker of mine, he had a bunch of Source magazines in his attic, and he's just trying to get rid of stuff. And we were talking, and I told him I'd take them, so he gave them to me. And going through those magazines, because I haven't like sat down and read articles and all that stuff, but like you would see the Fat Tape, and just that was kind of like the online track listing of like the 90s, because if a record made Fat Tape, you instantly wanted to hear it.
Yes.
So much so that things, when you would have opportunities to hear it, so you would go to a Sam Goody or a mom and pop shop where you could hear albums or whatever, you would go and you would skip to the Fat Tape record. You would see records consistently get, because that Rec Room was on a couple of Fat Tapes,
I'm sure.
And so I remember when I heard Uncontrolled Substance for the first time, I went straight to, was it on Rec Room? It was Rec Room was on the album, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I went straight to Rec Room. And then I went to, what was that, Knife Chamber?
Maybe, yeah.
One of those chambers, one of them.
One of
a numerical chamber.
One of those chambers would be the worst name for a Wu-Tang Clan song.
No, Numerical Chamber totally sounds like a Bobby Digital record.
Oh my goodness. Then I started digging into Bobby Digital and Inspect the Deck freestyling over, was it Stand Up? I think it might have been Stand Up.
Charlie Baltimore?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously not Ludacris, but.
right. And
can you imagine RZA rapping over? I'll move, you move.
Bobby Digital. Yeah. And yeah, there's some things in life, like, we, you know, for people who missed it, to try to explain to them that this happened. And like, yes. Bobby Digital is one of them. Like, first you have to understand like how impactful Wu-Tang was. Then 100%. You have to get to a place where record labels were making so much money that they would let artists who had big names do whatever they want.
100%.
Right. And then sort of the mystique that builds up around Wu-Tang Clan. And that all culminates with the Bobby Digital album.
That's, yeah. And that was, oh boy. Yeah, but we have a Wu-Tang Clan retrospective that you can check at Clock Radio.
And a definitive 15, all fantastic episodes.
Yep.
But no, it was amazing just because, like, you know, even though he, you know, because Stand Up is that like 99, 2000? In that range, right?
99, I want to say. Might have been 98, but I want to say 99.
I think it's basically between Bobby Digital and Supreme Clientele.
Yeah, okay.
And so RZA made such a left turn. Well, not really. I mean, we talked about this in the show. Actually, we talked about this on Retrospectives and Definitive 15s. Like, he's perceived as making having made such a left turn on Bobby Digital with the keyboard heavy sound, that the fact that Stand Up, which is a ridiculous beat, incredible sample, and even though he's still like rapping in his Bobby Digital persona, it turns out when you take that and strip away some of the more eccentric, you know, like when you strip some of that away and you just put RZA rapping over a beat like Stand Up, it's like, it was a glimpse into like, oh right, what if he just made a RZA album?
Yeah.
And so I appreciated that.
I'm sure you did.
And then Ray, Ghost, and Joe Claire freestyling over Gold of Jizz's album. Oof. Rap City, I was like, come on. It was a good trip down memory lane.
Better freestyler, Joe Claire or Big Tigger?
It hurts my heart to say this. It might be Big Tigger.
Might be Big Tigger, yeah.
Joe Claire was the originator.
He was. Bro, he broke down a lot of doors, but yeah. People were clamoring for a Big Tigger album. Do you remember that?
I do. Wasn't he on the Snake remix?
He 100% was.
In a sense, he kind of missed his time.
He 100% missed it.
And he did miss his time because he had Rap City, but he would totally have an album now.
Oh, yeah, he would have been came out. I mean, hey, friend of the show, Rob Markman, he came out with an album, I think, 2 weeks ago.
Rob Markman of Genius has an album.
Yeah.
With, like, Justice League production.
Yeah, like it's a real album.
Living the dream, man.
Yeah, yeah, shout out to Rob.
But no, now, I mean, you got folks like Cardi B, right, who starts off with this one era of celebrity, turns that into, for a variety of odd reasons, a hit record, and...
Do you want to talk about those odd reasons?
Oh, man. Hip-hop's in bad shape right now, man. I shouldn't say that. In some ways, hip-hop has never been healthier.
Yeah, right. So in terms of being able to, you know, having access to artists putting out music, touring, you know, for many people, they would say this is another golden era.
Right. The walls really are broken down for the most part. Like, there are still some things that pop up. There's still some artists trapped in bad situations, but more than you can probably maybe say than ever before, you have both the combination of artists who have the ability to get music out and the democratization of the music making process, mm-hmm. right? You don't have to get signed. You don't have to get into a studio. And that's been happening for a while, right? I mean, 10 years ago, you and I were, you know, real early on the no, I've got a computer, I can do this. You don't even need a computer now. Like, yeah. You can do it with your phone. Like, really?
Yeah.
You can make full-fledged beats with your phone. If you hooked up a $50 microphone to it, you can make a song.
Yeah.
Like, that's not that barrier is gone. And that is, in theory, that means you know, when there's no gatekeepers, you know, the era of GZA rapping about A&Rs who play electric guitar and climb a mountain, like, that's not
that, I had to quote GZA, didn't you?
That must sound foreign now to people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we grew up in an era where it was always, you know, Q-Tip rapping about, you know, music industry is shady, and that becoming like a mantra of hip hop for so many years. Like, you still hear some of that in a ton of places, and there's still a lot of little this, a little that, but it is a very different world.
Yep.
Right. In some ways, Lil Wayne might be the last artist sort of trapped.
Yeah. Maybe Drake, kind of. He's got one foot in, one foot out.
Kind of. I mean, although because he might be trapped in a deal, but because of his relationship with Apple, he could just put music out and doesn't really matter.
Exactly. So he's like, he's fake indie.
Right. Right. Wayne is a little deeper, but Wayne's also been around since, you know, 97.
90, yeah, 96, 97.
So in some strengths, like, hip hop is stronger than ever before, but the impact of stream, like, there is a downside. To admit, you maybe this is, you know, maybe, you know what, I might be an elitist, like, won't be the first time I've heard that accusation thrown at me. I think that while you gain a lot, you also do lose something when you lose gatekeepers, right? Like,
absolutely,
the overall level of quality, and I'm not just saying this is like the old man who like can't adjust, because there's stuff sometimes stuff comes out and you're like, yeah, like, mm-hmm. I get it, like, and it's different, it's not what I grew up on, right, at all. Right. Like, you can argue at a technical level that both rappers and producers are either capable of or feel free to do more than they could when we were growing up. Like,
yeah.
There were lanes, like real lanes when we were coming up. Mm-hmm. Right. In many ways, that doesn't exist anymore. So like when So the capabilities are almost infinite, right? And so that is also amazing. But because there are no gatekeepers, you know, this isn't that dissimilar. And we'll tie this into something that I'm still going to talk about later, definitely. This is not that dissimilar from what has happened with politics, right? Where when you remove sort of these traditional gatekeepers, yes, it means you get like, in politics, it's the will of the people. In music, it's, oh, the fans are, you know, the fans vote with, you know, their ears or their dollars or their clicks. Like, you can see what works and what doesn't. But there is like the concept of like a curator in some way, right? Whether that's a music, you know, a radio station programmer, whether that's an A&R on the music side in politics, whether that's a party official or somebody in some, you know, hypothetical back room making deals or whatever. Like there is this notion of like somebody who has in music, it's having an ear, right? Mm-hmm. And goes, oh, right. We can put this together. We can put this together. In some senses, that's an executive. In some senses, it's somebody like Quincy Jones or even Dr. Dre or people who like have a bigger picture and work with artists to get sort of stuff done. But that's not really what happens with music anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and again, like I said, the plus side is we're going to hear from people who we would have never heard from before. And there is something powerful about that. But on the negative side, it means that we're going to hear everything.
We're going to hear everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
And going along with that is a move towards what I don't know what to call it, except the democratization of like of rapping. And what I mean by that is this will make me sound like the old man in the club or the old man get off my yard. But like what I run through routinely, like playlists on Apple Music and Tidal and other places of like, hey, here's like brand new stuff that's out. Like I try it. Like I don't want to like close myself off on purpose. And I hear artists all the time who I'm like, yeah, that's really interesting. Like I really like that. Like one song we haven't really talked about. I haven't talked about much all summer is by this dude, was it Gold Link? Of course, I can't think of the name of the song. But there are like records by new artists who I don't talk about on the show who I'm like, yeah, I like that. That's interesting. But there's also this strain of like, it's almost not even rapping. It's yeah. like talking.
Yeah. it's babbling.
And some of that is in a weird way, we have really talented artists who do something that looks easy and is actually really difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And when those are the trendsetters, you run into problems. Like it is actually difficult to do what Future does.
Yeah.
And while I don't agree, there are often times where I can't understand a word that Young Thug is saying, although I think he's gotten better with that. Like not everybody can do what Young Thug does. And that's a statement I can't believe I'm saying on Clock Radio Speakers. Like, there is a skill. It is a distinct skill from rapping and songwriting, but there is a skill to harmonies.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, well, if I mimic what Future's doing and you put you auto-tune or you put some other effect on me and I rap about Zans or rap sing / mumble about Zans with a trap beat that sound has now run its course and is so democratized that, you know, if I was a producer making my name off of trap records, like I'd be looking for an exit strategy.
Yeah.
Like what is my next, like what is the next wave that I need to get up on? Because like anybody is, no disrespect to folks who are doing those beats, I do them sometimes, like, cause sometimes I want to make them and I like them, but like everybody is making beats like that now.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get music from everybody, absolutely yeah. everybody. And in an era of social media where, you know, you, and your fan relation, like your relationship as a fan with artists is so not quite, it's not like, oh, I heard this song on the radio or I bought this CD, I heard it and I like it and I want to hear more of it. You're invested in them because of their social media. You're invested in them because, you know, you're watching the television show that they're on or you're catching up with this Snap story or you're watching their Instagram. Like you're doing all these various things and you become fans of people, not music. Mm-hmm. Because that Cardi B record is awful, right? And what she's doing is like the style of rapping that Nicki will sometimes do that people like you and I, and I hope most fans, actually don't really like. That like fake hard where she tries to make her voice a little deeper, Nicki rapping.
Yeah.
What Cardi B is doing is just doing a poor impersonation of that.
With a ting of a Spanish accent.
Right. But people like Cardi B, the person.
Yep. That's
and they it. Want her to succeed.
That's it.
And so she is succeeding.
Yep.
And so when we become fans of people, not because of necessarily their great musicians, but because of their personalities, right? Or for politicians, when we become fans of people, not because of the policies that they say or their record of success, but this cult of personality, we end up in very unintended and weird spots.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also, I mean, I can keep, I have, the other thing I want to say that's really interesting about, like, to watch how it's impacted hip hop is streaming, right? So with TV, streaming has had a ridiculous effect because all of a sudden you have a bunch of people outside the normal system, right? Not ABC, not CBS, not Fox, not even HBO, although HBO is sort of trying to be half Netflix, right? But whether it's Netflix or Amazon, you know, Apple just said they're going to spend, a report came out, they're going to spend $1 billion on trying to create stuff. Amazon, like, people are doing all this stuff, Hulu. Because of that, what's happening is people who are sort of already in the system. So in hip hop, it would be the sort of the equivalent of like, oh, the, you know, this production camp or this group of songwriters or this whatever. These streaming people, the streaming services go directly to them because there's no notion of like a major label in TV, right? You have channels, but that's it. And so you're pumping a bunch of money and there's so much content, but it's almost universally agreed upon that there's too much good TV. You can't possibly keep up.
Yeah.
And some of that is because there are still kind of gatekeepers, but also because while you can make songs that could and have gotten played on the radio from your phone or your tablet or whatever, you don't need my big, Ableton Push 2 with a mic. You don't need that necessarily. Like, I like it because I enjoy this thing, but like, you don't need that. Whereas you can't just, as of yet, we haven't seen, although you see some of this on YouTube, you see more of it on YouTube, but we haven't yet seen the, no, I made this, 1 hour TV, this 1 hour Netflix special on my phone.
Yeah.
Like, we're getting close to that, but we're not there yet.
Yeah.
And so there is still, and this is kind of like, on the one hand, this makes me sound elitist because there is still like a barrier to entry for TV. And so what you really have are like a bunch of talented people who all of a sudden don't have to go through the regular television process and have this other way to get stuff out. It would be like if if 10 years ago you erased the major label system and you invented streaming, and all of a sudden all these different camps and groups of people were signing like one-off little deals with this and this and this, sort of like what Drake is doing with Apple Music and what other folks have done with Apple or Tidal, but sort of more driven around like, oh, I'm going to release stuff with you first. No, like, I'm going to release a stream of stuff for you. And then these people are going to, and people would be like, oh, I got to subscribe to every streaming service. And it would be like this fever pitch,
Yeah.
But that's not what happened with music, right? Instead, you still have labels and they still kind of do stuff. And anyways, they're kind of chasing trends. And you and I had talked in the show for a while that we sort of thought this world might emerge where instead of a label that did all this stuff, you would have these pockets of like, oh, well, this is like pockets of like teams that are independent consultants that would sort of like come together to like help an artist. Oh, if you're an artist, you hire us. We're not a label, but you hire us and we like take you to the next level and we put this out, but it's only for a project and sort of like reassemble. And like, we had sort of talked about this on previous iterations of the show, but that's not really what's happening. Like, we're sort of in this weird stage. And like I said, on the one hand, it's fantastic that we have access to music that we would have never otherwise had access to. And streaming has made it so if you are a fan of hip hop, if you are young, if you are like just getting to hip hop, whether you're a teenager or you're 40 or whatever, you can jump into hip hop in a way that you could never do, at a price point that you could never do when we were growing up. But I think there is an unintended consequence.
Yeah.
And now that I have ranted for like 20 minutes, am I crazy? Or like, there's this real, like, there's a lot of bad music out there right now.
It's, I think more important than bad is that it's not engaging. And
yeah, not creative,
Yeah. So with wrestling, one of the things that they tell you is that any reaction is better than no reaction. So if you're a good guy and you come out and they boo you, then you don't wonder why they boo you. You play to the boos, vice versa. But if you come out and they're supposed to cheer you and they're supposed to boo you and you can hear your theme music really, really clear, something's wrong. And I think for me, a lot of music that's out, God bless you for being able to like go through these playlists and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, I go through and I mean, I don't even bother. I'm getting to that place now. I always wondered where this was, where my dad was one of the main people who got me into hip hop. And, I have to tell him, like, he hasn't heard Good Kid, Mad City. He hasn't heard like this whole new wave of hip hop that's really good. And I know that a record like Good Kid, Mad City would be right up his alley because he was such a big DJ Quick fan. He was such a big Death Row. He's a big West Coast hip hop fan.
Right.
I know you're going to love this, Dad. You should check this out. And he's just not in a rush to get to it because he's just he's just evolved from wanting to even engage in hip hop. He kind of still checks in every once in a while, but he has his favorites that he goes to, more than likely stuff that was released 10, 20, 30 years ago. You know, hip hop turned, what, 44 last week?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Okay, so, you know, I'm starting to get in that same wavelength while still check in, and there's still great music. Tyler's album is great. Jay's album is great. We forget that Ross's album came out a few months ago. I still love that album. I actually played it today. But in large, you're now starting to see other rappers say, maybe I don't need to make music anymore. When's the last time somebody like Fabolous put out some music? You know what I'm saying? Joe Budden has outright said, I'm not going to make music anymore. I'm going to go into media. And if you watch his show, it's very rarely about music. But as to your point, they spend 45 to 50 minutes a day discussing musicians doing regular people stuff. And you and I come in the era where musicians did regular people stuff once in a blue moon at the MTV Awards and at the American Music Awards and at the Grammys. That was really the only time you saw them, or when they were on Rap City or Video Soul or TRL or whatever. That was the only time. I'm going to tune into TRL because Puff Daddy's going to be on there. Now, just go on his Twitter. I just go on his Instagram. That's where we are now, and that's cool, but that's fine. I'm not mad at the evolving as long as the music is there. And for me, the music just isn't there. And when I go and people tell me to check this out, or if I keep hearing something consistently like Bodak Yellow, Bodak Yellow, Bodak, I sound like Black and Yellow. Check out Bodak Yellow. It's the song of the summer. It's this, it's that. And then I hear it and I'm like, it's trash. This is absolutely 100% not for me. And to your point, didn't I hear Nicki do this like 2 years ago?
And she got panned for it.
Yeah, she got panned for it. And it was better because Nicki's a better rapper than Cardi. Like, even if we take away the ghostwriting, just in terms of flow, cadence, technical aspects of rapping, Nicki runs laps around Cardi. But because Cardi's the new energy, she's the new wave or whatever. Nicki on Instagram, the interesting thing is that Nicki's been putting out records over the last few years. And you and I talked about this on the show years ago. Nicki needs records. Nicki needs records. And she'll have one every once in a while. Her last record was what? Truffle Butter?
Is that really true? No. She had the records about Meek.
No. Ones that actually hit.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, she's put out music over the last 2 years and freestyles and stuff. But the last Nicki Minaj song that hit, that did damage on the charts, that, you know, was successful.
And Trouble Butter was almost like an accident.
Right.
It was a bonus track.
It was a bonus track.
It sort of caught fire slowly.
Yep.
You know, they didn't try to really push that up front at all. They had all these other big, like, popish kind of records.
Yep.
Pinkprint was what, end of 2014?
Yeah, something like that.
Wow.
Something like that.
Nowadays, I mean, you know, right, 20 years ago, sure, an artist could go 3 years without an album, but that was about time. But in 2017?
Yeah.
3 years?
3 years.
It's a whole...
With a couple singles, and those singles should have held her over, but they didn't. You know what I'm saying? The only notable thing that Nicki's done, I mean, she's got all these, and this is what she's doing on Instagram now. She's either half naked showing her body, or she's, you know, posting accolades. You know, this record went number one on Billboard, and these aren't even her records. These are just records that she's featured on. So I think that is buying into the narrative, and this narrative sucks. Can we talk about this real quick?
Sure.
I mean, two men who grew up in our part of hip hop culture. I don't know how much, you know, analysis we can provide, but there's this theory that's going around that because Cardi is growing in success, that all of a sudden Nicki is in trouble and Nicki has to do something and Nicki's time is almost up because Cardi is growing in popularity, as if only one woman can be successful in any particular field. Is that not the dumbest thing you've ever heard?
It is incredibly dumb. I do wonder how much of this is a particular New York phenomenon where it is almost. So if you look at how they treat their sports teams, like, if the Knicks are dominating the coverage, then regardless of if the Nets should be doing anything or if they should just be chilling or whatever, the conversation becomes, oh, what are the Nets going to do to respond? Because there is still this sort of environment of, like, it's weird. Like, New York hasn't quite caught on, at least when they think about media and how this sort of thing works. They haven't quite caught on, quite caught on to the fact that, like, it's not like we're fighting over the back page of the newspaper anymore. Like, media is not scarce. Like,
right.
There's a lot more room out there now.
Yeah, right? Media is actually begging for stories.
Right, right. And so the idea that, like you said before, I mean, look, we can and have quibbled quite a bit with choices that Nicki Minaj has made. But there is no, like, world that I can foresee right now where Cardi B is a better rapper or more musically talented than Nicki Minaj. That doesn't mean she's a better person or anything like that, but it becomes weird because fandom, like I said, is so not tied up with how good, how, like, talented are you actually.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And there have always been cases for a long time in music where people become fans of the person, right?
Yep.
In a very real sense, boy bands are kind of built on this idea.
100%. Yeah.
But that, right. And sort of the, you know, the aura of a musician or sort of the mystique or the package and all that has always played a role. And there have always been fans who were there for just the, there were always fans who were there just for the person. But there was always this, like, facade of, no, they're real musicians.
Yeah.
Right? Like, would Milli Vanilli even care now?
I showed my kids the part in Behind the Music when the tape skipped this summer. That was a very interesting conversation to have with an 8-year-old and 12-year-old. They just could not fathom that, you know, Milli Vanilli or any artist would do that.
Right. Well, first of all, you wouldn't even need to pretend that you sang a certain way now. Right now, you would build up the fandom of Milli Vanilli first. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a dumb question. I don't know that much about Milli Vanilli, actually. They were brothers? Was that the idea? I was assuming they were.
I don't think, so.
Okay. So the idea is instead of, oh, here's this duo. They, you know, they could do it. They got a couple options, right? They could do it all mysterious, like, you know, 2010 Abel, or they could do, like, lots of options. Like, they would sort of build them up and there'd be all this social media stuff, maybe get them on reality. And, like, by the time you get to the music, it'd almost be like, well, I like this person, so I'm going to listen to this.
Yeah.
And because streams are counted not just by, like, oh, I'm sitting down and consuming music, right? We consume music as background or in other ways from other avenues. So the metrics are sort of twisted now, right? If you can go number one off of a meme, then
yeah,
you have to just say that our relationship with how we consume music, even if it hasn't 100% changed for all of us, because it's a numbers game, it's just a cycle and it's just going to keep responding to that.
Yeah. You think about it every day. You are seeing the same artists. All the artists that I follow on social media, they post every day, several times a day. They are consistently and constantly in your face. So even when they're not making music, they are giving you them for you to buy into it. So then when the music comes out, you kind of want to hear it because you want to hear what artistic expression comes out of them. You feel like you know them. You feel like you know their families, their quirks, their style, their friends. And so what's weird is, and I mean, I experienced this on a much lesser degree. When people see you out in public, they act like they know you, like they know you.
Yeah.
You know, hey man, how your kids doing? You know, and for a while that really bothered me, but then you learn to temper what you post. So it's like, if I'm willing to have a conversation about this with a stranger, you know, is this okay for me to post? Because when I go outside, there are people who are just literally watching you and not saying a word, you know, so that plays into it. But nowadays for the artists, that's what you want. The mystique is gone. You've got her doing shows now, but she'll have like big glasses on or like a scarf, but she's like in an outdoor venue. It's weird.
Is she trying to be Sia?
Right. Exactly. I mean, again, I still think that Abel and shout out to Trav for posting that really stupid question on Twitter this week. If who had a better discography between The Weeknd and The Dream? That was just a really bad question, but I love you, Trav.
The Dream. I mean, we cape for The Dream.
Not only do, even if I didn't cape for The Dream, nothing that Abel has done can even touch The Dream's pretty good work. Never mind his best work. His pretty good work, Abel can't touch.
What's the best Weeknd song?
Ooh. It's got to be something off of House of Balloons.
Right. So here's the scarier part. What's the best Abel song of the past 5 years? Is it really I Can't Feel My Face?
The Pharrell remix of Wanderlust? I don't know. Tell Your Friends? I don't know.
Right.
I don't like any. That's what I was saying. Like, so
you don't like, you don't like his coked up pseudo MJ stees.
No, but here again, I loved douchebag Abel. I love dirtbag. Can't get myself together. I'm all over the, which really sucks. Cause of course as a person, you want him to be okay. But like, I loved House of Balloons. I really liked Thursday. I liked Early Weekend. And then to see him go from this weird ominous figure with his dreads all over the place, and I don't know, is a Weekend a group, is it a person, woo, to I Can't Feel My Face, I'm and sorry. He's like dancing.
I'm sorry. I just pictured Abel with a sheet with the eyes cut out. Woo!
That's exactly, I'm a spooky singer.
But the hair's got to find a way out. So he's
you're going to cut a small hole in the top so that... Oh my God. So for him to go from that to like dancing to I Can't Feel My Face at the Grammys with like pyro behind him and people calling him the next MJ and all that craziness, it's just crazy where we are. But I just want the music. People really have, like I was telling you, you know, we normally do a top 10. I might have 5 this year. I might have 5 and my album might be the 5th album. Like nothing is, even my, I mean, Alchemist dropped the B tape. I didn't like it. He put out a follow-up to The Good Book. Yeah. I didn't like
it. Nothing good, huh?
Nothing good. West Side Gunn and Conway. Nothing they've put out of here and there, songs here and there.
That is the most overhyped.
Don't do that.
Overhyped.
Don't do that.
Thing going on right now.
I'll say this. I'll say this about them. And shout out to Charles Longo. Super fan of the show. Good dude. We talk about them all the time because they're really, really interesting as independent artists to watch. If they would make a concentrated project instead of just like flooding the streets, their discography would look completely different. Like they'll put out a SoundCloud EP with like 5 or 6 songs. Out of the 5 or 6 songs, 2 will be really, really dope and the rest will be aight to nah. But if you take 3 or 4 of those EPs, put them together and take the best 2 records and do an 8-track project, the project's amazing. But they want to flood. That's the other side to this, where maybe you're not as good with creating the narrative, because I think I follow them both on Instagram, and they're both very boring follows. Conway will just post what he's eating, and just he'll just stare at the camera while music is playing in the background. It's really weird. Like there's no engagement. So for some people, they can't do what Cardi does, how Cardi's able to engage her audience on a couple times a day basis. They're trying to engage with their strongest weapon, which is their music. And so because you want to get it out there, flood, low-key going from that Lil Wayne school 2007, 2008, 2009 of putting out something all the time, consistently having music out there, but people don't even have time to listen to music. Nowadays, people don't even have time for podcasts. You know what I'm saying? So,
I mean, except for hopefully this one, we appreciate y'all liking and subscribing.
100%. 100%. So I don't know, man. It's really interesting, but I agree with you. Like music is just not where I need it to be, and I don't know if I want it to get back anywhere. Like this might just be what it is. Is hip-hop going to approach another golden era? Hip-hop is the music is going to follow the culture, the culture is going to follow the music. And right now, because music is so secondary, the music is obviously going to follow the culture, and the culture is not at a place where I enjoy it, so I'm not really expecting anybody outside of my favorites to do anything. I'm sure there will be new artists that I love, but I'm not actively looking for them. I don't have time.
I think you can look to the history of rock, and I think it's actually really instructive, right? Where initially there was just rock, but yeah, eventually you got to a place where it was acknowledged that it was big enough that you had subgenres, right? That were like different categories of radio stations, and there were enough fans. And I think that like hip hop is there. We just don't do it yet. Like there are like some of these records. I mean, aside from the fact that you know what, it's not a live band and it's like, it's typically a person of color who's rapping or singing. Like, you can't tell me these are in the same genre. You know, now part of that is because hip hop is so open and like flexible, and one artist can make one song that sounds like one thing, one sounds like another. And I'm not trying to put people in like in lanes that they don't want to be in. But I think we have now reached the point where there's like, oh, like trap might just end up being like how like in rock, there's like alternative rock and there's hard rock and there's metal. Yeah. And like trap might just be its thing. That might just be its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And just like in rock, where sometimes an artist can, oh, I'm going to dabble with this and I'm going to take from this. But like there are just heavy metal bands. But then there are sometimes artists who make records that borrow from metal. Right. And I think conversely with hip hop, we might just get to that place. We're just not there yet. We still call this huge thing of music hip hop.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. You actually make a good point. I think we might be going there.
And so to
boom bap is always, and we never had that conversation, where boom bap is always just going to be, boom bap is always going to have a place in hip hop. Now, where it's going to have a place at depends on the time, but you will have people, DJ Premier will never need to beg for work. He'll always be popular. So maybe trap goes in that same category, because trap has been a sound and a dominant style for, this might be what, 10 years? 07, right?
I don't know. I think I really feel like that in a weird way. That MMG album is in very way, and really, you might even just go back to BMF and what was the other Ross record?
MC Hammer.
BMF and MC Hammer. I think you could start it right there.
Yeah.
Because it existed before then, but that is a very particular style of trap that has now morphed and progressed, and there have been like, you know, what Young Chop did with hi-hats influenced this whole generation, and really snares as well. Like, there's been different things that have gone along and different producers of the moment who've come and gone. But, like, you can really almost start that dark, like, minor keys, aggressive, hard trap records. They start right there.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's where I start the lineage at. But that's 7 years?
Yeah, that's 11. So that's 6 years.
Right. And I know that there are folks who were like, oh, T.I. had trap music back in. That was a different kind. Like, Jeezy was a totally different kind of trap music.
Yeah.
That's not what, when I say trap, I mean like what we now consider trap music. Like,
sort of the slower tempo. Cause I mean, if you listen to, you know, records like 24's, Jeezy's Bring It Back, those are faster.
Yeah.
Though Jeezy had, even a record like Bang was probably a little slower for that time. But it's nowhere near as slow as...
Right, it's a good 10 to 15, maybe even more BPMs of a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a whole different feel.
Yeah, it's even worse. It's even slow. What I mean by worse, I mean just drastic. But it's even slower now.
We hope you enjoyed Side A of this week's episode. Please check out Side B at clockradiospeakers.com.